We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Just in the year 2014, immoral and it's unjust, and these beings need to be protected by writs of habeas corpus. They need to be legal persons so they have the fundamental right to bodily liberty that protects them, because other than that, they will continue to be naked to our power the way they always have been, and it has to change.
That's Stephen Wise of the Non-Human Rights Project speaking there in an excerpt from a recent Diane Rehm show from National Public Radio on the fight for legal rights for animals. Now, he's talking mostly there about chimpanzees. He also talks about killer whales. And one begins to wonder, is this just about protecting animals from mistreatment, be it in zoos or in entertainment or in medical research or in any other way that animals may be kept or used? Is the animal rights movement about elevating the rights or the protections for the animal kingdom, or is it about something else? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Thursday afternoon, the 1st of May. In our first half hour's conversation, Wesley Smith will be our guest. We're going to talk about the fight for legal rights for animals. A little bit later, we'll spend some time with Dr. David Coles. Very recently, this last Sunday, the Roman Catholic Church officially canonized Pope John Paul II, the probably most famous pope of the 20th century, and also John the 23rd, the second most famous pope of the 20th century. They were both made saints officially to be venerated, and their relics to be similarly adored. Now, this is not a new thing in the Roman Catholic Church. It's actually a rather old thing dating back to the 13th century. We'll talk about canonization and relics with Dr. David Coles of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Pastor Ryan Wendt will join us after that. We'll talk about reading and understanding the New Testament Gospels. He's written an article for the Lutheran Witness titled, "The Gospels, a Satisfying Feast." And then Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will join us. As he usually does, we'll do Christ in the Old Testament today, Isaiah chapter 40 and 1 Peter 1. We'll spend that time with him in the last half hour of Issues Etc. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. You can send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at @issuesetc. Wesley Smith is a regular guest. He's senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism, author of several books, including A Rat is a Pig, is a Dog, is a Boy, The Human Cost of the Animal Rights Movement, and author of a column for National Review Online called Human Exceptionalism. Wesley, welcome back.
Thanks. You know, I've been telling people about this for years. People didn't take me seriously.
That's true. I mean, I've heard you talk about it many, many times. So yes. To begin with, is the animal rights movement, as we find it today, being pushed both in the courtroom and in the classroom, is it simply about affording better protections for animals in medical research and in how they are kept in zoos or in homes or for or as livestock?
I have two words for you. Absolutely not. That's animal welfare. And animal welfare has been a noble cause that has been ongoing actually since the Bible. I mean, if you take a look at some of the animal welfare requirements in the Old Testament, humans have always understood to greater and lesser degrees that we have an obligation to treat animals properly and humanely. And those standards keep improving as we go along, particularly as we get better technology. People like Temple Grandin, who's a wonderful woman, professor from Utah, University of Utah. She has minor
Asperger's.
And she's able to, or autism, she's able to kind of envision how animals perceive things visually instead of rationally, and she's made tremendous strides for example, in the way cattle are slaughtered, so that they've even come to the point, and they've measured this, that cattle can go to the slaughter without even knowing they're about to die and not getting all stressed out. That's animal welfare, and that's a noble cause. Animal rights, on the other hand, properly understood, is an ideology. It is an ideology that creates a moral equality between humans and animals, that denies human exceptionalism specifically and adamantly, and the ultimate goal of which is to end all animal domestication. Therefore, groups like PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, will say that we should not use animals for food, for research, for clothing, for entertainment, or for any other purpose. The goal, and I make it pretty clear in my book that you mentioned with interviews with people like Gary Francione, is the end of all animal domestication because it is akin to slavery.
So what we're hearing, at least lately, are a lot of legal terms, and one of them, I'd like you to explain it to me, is classification of personhood when it comes to animals. And here, it's not so much about the capabilities, some sort of threshold which they must pass, but simply a presumption of personhood. What's meant in the animal rights movement by that term?
Well, that's more of a utilitarian concept than the pure animal rights concept, but it's used, such as in the clip you mentioned, as a way to break the species barrier. That's the term they use. That is, if we can have one court declare one animal to be a person, which would be equivalent to a child, then give that animal one right, then the entire edifice that distinguishes human beings and our moral value and our rights and so forth from the animal world will eventually collapse. So the concept of person, which is at this point restricted to human beings or their enterprises, such as a corporation is considered a fictional person, but that's because it's a human enterprise, a human juridical entity. They will say, people like Stephen Wise, the animal rights lawyer, that because chimps have a high level of intelligence and perhaps certain intellectual capacities, that they should be deemed akin to a human being in terms of personhood, and therefore that rather than owning a chimp, we should be their guardians, as we might be for a child or a conservator, as we might be for an elderly person with Alzheimer's disease, and hence the ownership of animals, starting with the so-called higher mammals, whales, chimps, and so forth, should be outlawed.
Why do we hear in these conversations a lot of reference to writs of habeas corpus? What does it mean?
Well, a writ of habeas corpus is a term that means to free the body. And it is when somebody in the West is unjustly imprisoned, a petition for writ of habeas corpus can be brought. And if you can get a court to agree that the imprisonment of the human being is illegal or unjust, the court will order a writ to issue so that that person, that human being, has to be freed. And I actually, it's very hard to get in terms of humans. I actually got one in my legal career. It's one of the gems of my whole legal career, is I was able to have a person released from prison because the California Supreme Court refused to provide for his constitutional rights. So the federal court said, since the California court will not treat this prisoner properly and protect his rights to an appeal in that case, we are ordering him released by a writ of habeas corpus. So what Stephen Wise is saying is that all chimpanzees currently in captivity should be able to receive a writ of habeas corpus as if they were a human being, because he believes that there's moral equivalence there. You saw that in the clip. Which would, of course, wreak havoc, because it wouldn't end with chimps either, wreak havoc with medical research in particular, although in the United States there's very little medical research done with chimps as a matter of animal welfare. In fact, the National Institutes of Health will no longer fund new research projects using chimpanzees. There are some scientists who say that's a big mistake because, for example, in HIV research, chimps are the closest to us genetically. It is theorized that HIV actually came from chimps, so we might be missing out on some scientific knowledge. But it's an ethical decision, not a science decision, and that was an animal welfare decision. Wise brought the lawsuits in New York and through the Non-Human Rights Project that sought to have three chimps get a writ of habeas corpus. All were turned down, but two of the judges apparently took the question very seriously. One of the chimps was in a roadside zoo, apparently being neglected. I noticed that Wise never turned them into animal welfare authorities, so perhaps his group was just as instrumental in its use of that chimp as the roadside zoo. One was a research chimp in a university lab, which they didn't know how that chimp was being cared for. So it was just the fact that the chimp was in captivity that counted. And another was a chimp being kept in a private home. They're going to bring these lawsuits all over the country under state law until they find that one judge. That one judge isn't necessarily hard to find. PETA, about 2 years ago, maybe less, brought a lawsuit for the orcas, the killer whales kept by SeaWorld, in which supposedly they were slaves. And of very acute interest to our discussion was that the federal judge threw PETA's lawsuit out of court on the basis that for a slave to be a slave, they have to be a person. And this judge actually quoted antebellum definitions of what a slave is, which is when one person is owned by another person. And so he said, since whales are not persons, obviously they can't be slaves. Well, once you declare that an animal is a person, quote unquote, then they are slaves. And that's, of course, the point. Todd, there are 100 law schools or more of the top law schools in this country with animal law clinics that are training the best and brightest lawyers in our country to bring these kinds of lawsuits once animal standing, as it's called, becomes allowed. And you will see a buzzstorm, a blizzard, a hurricane of these lawsuits intended to destroy animal-using industries, because the goal is not better treatment of animals. It is the end to all animal domestication of every single kind. That's animal rights. The term animal rights is sometimes used as a synonym for animal welfare. We should stop using that term that way because it's inaccurate. Animal rights is an ideology. It opposes the uniqueness of human life, and it seeks to destroy any instrumental or property ownership of animals by humans as a matter of ideology.
Wesley Smith is our guest. We're talking about the fight for legal rights for animals on this Thursday afternoon, May the 1st. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Feel free to join us with a question or a comment. Wesley will be with us for about another 25 minutes. 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE. What happens when our theology is driven by freshness instead of faithfulness? I've written an article for the latest Issues Etc. journal titled New Thing Theology. You can read it by subscribing to the online Issues Etc. journal. Just look for the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. The Wittenberg Trail feature details how Bob Leeko journeyed from the Word Faith movement to faith in Christ alone. The free online Issues Etc. journal.
Every week, Ravenelli's Restaurant and Carryout cooks up 29,000 pieces of chicken, 980 gallons of meat sauce, 310 loaves of fresh bread, and 200 fresh pies and cakes. Ravenelli's Restaurant and Carryout in Granite City, Collinsville, and O'Fallon, Illinois. Ravenelli's.com. Ravenelli's.com. Ravenelli's Restaurant and Carryout.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Hello, I'm Pastor Daniel Quinn, Senior Pastor of Living Word Lutheran Church, The Woodlands, Texas, inviting you to join us for divine service on Sundays at 8:15 or 11 a.m. Living Word is located at 9500 North Panther Creek Drive in the Woodlands, a community about 30 miles north of Houston. That's Living Word Lutheran Church, where we proclaim the living word of Christ, that all who hear may walk in newness of life.
Hey, St. Louis. How would you like to achieve your fitness goals in a fun and supportive atmosphere? Hi, this is Kevin Reisick, owner and operator of Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois. We offer adult boot camps throughout the week. These camps include cardiovascular conditioning, muscular strength and endurance training, balance and coordination activities, and more. For more information, give me a call at 618-670-6952, Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois, 618-670-6952.
All of human history shows that the only way in which an entity can be protected is if the law recognizes them as legal persons, which means they have the capacity for one or more legal rights, and then acknowledges that, indeed they should have certain sorts of fundamental rights that protect their fundamental interests.
That's Stephen Wise of the non-human rights project, organization that is bringing lawsuits in order to at least get some legal recognition of personhood or rights for animals, distinct from animal welfare. Our guest on this subject, Wesley Smith, on this Thursday, May the 1st. Wesley used a term before the break that also needs a little bit of glossary work, and that is moral equivalence. What's the principle here in this debate?
Well, what in the animal rights movement, and we've talked about this kind of thing quite a bit on your show, and I'm very appreciative of that, there is an attack on human exceptionalism, meaning the unique value or the unique importance of human life, across a broad array of issues. We've talked many times about bioethics, which also gets into this personhood thing, where that if a human being does not have those capacities deemed to bring personhood, this is the other side of the same coin. For example, Terry Schiavo, who had lost those capacities such as being self-aware over time or having the capacity to value their own life, self-consciousness, this kind of thing that they throw out, that they then lose the value that we accord to human beings. So that animals who have higher capacities are deemed to have greater value than human beings who have either not developed those capacities because of illness or injury or immaturity, or have lost them. So you can see the second side of that. So what the animal rights people are saying is, and again, this personhood is more of the utilitarian bioethics issue than an animal rights issue. Animal rights is what gives value to life. What gives it the importance is the ability to feel pain. And, of course, that covers a very wide variety of life forms. And let me just give you a little bit of quoting here. These are short quotes. The fellow who came up with the whole concept of speciesism, that is, if you treat an animal differently than a human because humans have greater value, that's called speciesism, which is deemed the same as odious as racism. And the fellow's name is Richard Ryder. He's a professor, of course. And here's what he says. Our concern for the pain and distress of others should be extended to any penient, pain-feeling being, regardless of his or her sex, class, race, religion, nationality, or species. Indeed, if aliens from outer space turn out to be penient, or if we ever manufacture machines who, notice that, are penient, then we must widen the moral circle to include them. Penience is the only convincing basis for attributing rights or indeed interests to others. So what he is saying is that being human is morally irrelevant. What matters is the ability to feel pain, or sometimes they say to suffer, which can include things beyond pain, such as boredom, fear, this kind of thing. And that means that that all animals, which can feel pain, are moral equals to humans, and therefore whatever we do to an animal should be viewed in the same way as if we did that same thing to a human. Therefore, cattle ranching is slavery. And here's how PETA put it. They had a Holocaust on Your Plate campaign several years ago, which they took to rock concerts, universities, because they're after the young. They're not after people with my colored hair. Here's what they said in the Holocaust on Your Plate campaign. Like people, animals desire the freedom to lead their lives in their own way. Like us, they suffer and feel fear. Like the Jews murdered in concentration camps, Animals are terrorized when they are housed in cramped, filthy warehouses and rounded up for shipment to slaughter. The leather sofa and handbag are the modern equivalent of the lampshades made from the skins of the people killed in the death camps, close quote. You know, Todd, I've been to Auschwitz. I've been to Birkenau. I stood in a gas chamber. I've seen the crematoria. I've walked that odious rail terminus where Jews were separated for slave torture labor or immediate extinction. And any movement that can't distinguish between the worst evil done to humankind and animal husbandry has no business preaching morality to anyone. But you will see this constant theme, the idea that what is being done to an animal is the same thing as if it was done to a human being, including by Stephen Wise and others. It's wrong. It is anti-human. It is destructive. It is not healthy. And it will cause tremendous human suffering if we allow this to continue.
Is it simply that, and this kind of follows from your statement there, is it simply that the animal rights movement, not animal welfare, but animal rights movement, does not, in the end, elevate the animal's standing, but in fact, as you gave in your example there, has a tendency to lower the human experience, that kind of suffering, to that of, you know, the cow who grazes and then is eventually, you know, sent to slaughter. Is that the only issue here?
In essence, they are lowering human beings to just another animal in the forest. And because they are saying that all of those things that distinguish us from animals, whether one is of faith and considers the idea of being made in the likeness and image of God, or whether it is the understanding that human beings are the only known moral agents in the universe, at least in the corporeal universe, we're the only ones with a sense of right and wrong and ought. All of that is meaningless to the animal rights activists, who tend, by the way, and this is not universally true, but tend to be very materialistic and or atheistic. And they're also very nihilistic, quite often. Ingrid Newkirk, who is the alpha wolf of PETA, she's the head of PETA, has said that she wishes humans had never appeared on the planet because of the suffering we've caused. Yet when you think about it, we're the only species that actively works to mitigate suffering in the world. Think about a seal. I live in California, as you know. I live near San Francisco. A seal washes up on one of our local beaches. What happens? Well, any other species that sees that seal, injured seal washed up on the beach, will either eat that helpless seal or ignore it and allow it to starve to death. Human beings save it. There is a huge distinction between us and other animals on the planet. You could say it is the difference between the Beaver's Dam and Hoover Dam. It is so broad and so vast, and when people like Stephen Wise and these other animal rights activists relativize and equalize the value of animals and humans, they are doing exactly what you said, and they're doing it with malice aforethought. They are reducing human beings to just another animal in the forest. And if that is indeed how we end up perceiving ourselves, that's precisely how we'll act.
Now, I want to pursue that because you said they're doing it with malice of forethought. Yeah. Make your case there.
Well, they're doing it because there is a loathing of humans, again, as the causers, as Ingrid Newkirk said, of suffering. My title of my book, A Rat is a Pig is a Dog is a Boy, I didn't make that up. That's one of her quotes. And the quote is to say that there is no difference between us and animals. There's a story today that came out in which some state representative, I think in New Hampshire, admitted that he intentionally ran over ducks in the road when he saw them, which I think is a terrible thing. But PETA said, well, what's next, running over children? As if those would be the same thing. They're not the same thing. And that is this barrier that they're trying to break down. And with many young people, they're succeeding. In fact, I would urge your listeners, ask your children what they're being taught about the difference, if any, between animals and humans. I first got into this issue about animal rights versus animal welfare because I gave a speech to an honors class at a high school. And I brought up this idea of human exceptionalism, the unique importance of human life, and Peter Singer, who we've discussed on your show before, who believes that not only does he believe in animal liberation and that animals should be given equal consideration to people, but he is also the prime advocate around the world for infanticide. That's not a coincidence, because when you give up human exceptionalism, that's the kind of thinking that you end up embracing. And so I gave this discussion about the importance of human exceptionalism to universal human rights, because if being human in and of itself is not what gives value to life, then how do you have universal human life? You have to say, well, if it isn't being human, what does? And this very bright young woman came up to me, and in the very earnest way that only the young have, I remember being like that, and she said, "You're saying that a human has greater value than a bunny." And I said, "Yeah." And she said, very, very emotionally, "No, a bunny can feel pain just like a human. We're equal." And I was taken aback. This is the first I'd heard of that kind of approach. And I was kind of taken aback, and I leaned back, and I said, "Do you really believe that?" And she said, "Yes, I do." And that's, Todd, what got me to start looking at this issue, because I thought, something's going on that we need to pay attention to. And that opened the door to me for all of this stuff. And, you know, now, as you know, we've talked about my book, War on Humans, that they're getting into it in terms of nature rights, creating rights for nature, not just animals. So, and if these things come to pass, animal rights, humans will have to respect the rights of animals, but animals won't have to respect the rights of humans, because they can't, they're not capable, nor of each other. So what are we really talking about? We're really talking about human duties, again, because human beings are the only moral agents on the planet. So even the animal rights activists are really not talking about rights. They're talking about imposing what I consider to be too onerous a duty on humans, because we also have duties to ourselves that can get involved in this issue. I gave a similar speech at Gonzaga Law School, only this time I focused more on the animal rights issue and human exceptionalism, and the animal rights activists came out to boo and hiss. And after the speech, they told me that, well, you believe in human exceptionalism, that's arrogant, that's hubristic, it means we can do whatever we want to animals, even though I'd said no, we as human beings have duties to treat animals humanely. That's part of human exceptionalism, that we have duties. No other animal, no other species has duties. And I finally said to this young man who challenged me several times on that point, even though I'd said that wasn't true, "Well, you tell me, sir, if being human is not what gives us the obligation to treat animals properly, what does?" And he stared at me, his jaw dropped, and he made like Jackie Gleason on The Honeymooners, "Hamina, hamina, hamina." And so I asked him three times, and he never could come up with an answer, because, Todd, there isn't an answer other than the fact that we're human. That's what gives us the obligation to treat animals properly. And if only we have the obligation, by definition, that means we're exceptional.
Wesley Smith is our guest. We're talking about the fight for legal rights for animals. He's senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism, author of several books, including A Rat is a Pig, is a Dog, is a Boy, The Human Cost of the Animal Rights Movement, and he is author of a column for National Review Online titled Human Exceptionalism. You can find out more about his book, A Rat is a Pig, is a Dog, is a Boy, the Human Cost of the Animal Rights Movement, at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about that crucial distinction between animal welfare, which is a good thing, and animal rights, which is a rather insidious thing. Stay tuned. Hey, what's the big deal? I'm an animal. The answer ended on my rooftop. What am I? The future and the truth.
Here's a special offer for Issues Etc. listeners. For any size gift during the Easter season, we'll send you a CD of an Easter sermon and a sermon on the prophet Job preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin. You can donate online, issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check, Issues Etc., Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. And for any size gift between Easter Sunday and Ascension Day, we'll send you a CD of two of Todd's sermons.
Do you wish your Lutheran school offered Latin, Greek, or logic? What about German or calculus? Right now, local Lutheran schools in two different states are utilizing Wittenberg Academy to expand their course offerings. Whether it's Latin for third graders or logic for seniors in high school, Wittenberg Academy can help. For your homeschooler or for your brick-and-mortar Lutheran school, we have solutions. To find out more, visit wittenbergacademy.org.
We talk to the biggest names in religion today, liberal bishop John Shelby Spong.
I don't think Jesus ever preached the Sermon on the Mount, for example. I don't believe anybody ever took five loaves and two fish and fed 5,000 people. I don't believe that's possible to do.
Liberal Bible critic Bart Ehrman.
There's a difference between what the historical Jesus actually said and what the Gospels say he said. And to understand what the historical Jesus was really like, we have to get behind the Gospels.
Muslim critic of Christianity Reza Aslan.
By definition, the resurrection is an ahistorical event, and so therefore historians have no right, no business commenting upon it.
Why do we do this? Because we know that the truth is on our side. Talk radio for the thinking Christian, Issues Etc. Listen live or on demand at issuesetc.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Not only does our church need men right now, but the world needs men who will proclaim the gospel in its purity.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Peter Scare, Associate Professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
If when you go to sleep at night you're thinking about it, my experience with it is this, is that thought won't go away. So if you're going to bed at night thinking about following our Lord and becoming a preacher of this gospel, then I would love if you could come and visit Fort Wayne, our campus. We'd love to show you around and show you what it is that we do.
Have you ever considered becoming a pastor? Contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana at 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or visit ctsfw.edu. Christ-centered, cross-focused, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
There are other entities who are deserving of personhood because they are not like human beings, but they're like themselves. We're not asking for human rights for chimpanzees. We're asking for chimpanzee rights for chimpanzees.
That again is Stephen Wise of the Non-Human Rights Project. We're talking about the legal fight for legal rights for animals. Wesley Smith of the Discovery Institute Center for Human Exceptionalism is our guest. Wesley, how do you respond to that when we hear someone like Stephen Wise says, we're not talking about human rights for animals, we're talking about animal rights for animals?
Oh, he's so full of baloney and disingenuous. The rights they want for animals, particularly, for example, chimps, there's the Great Ape Project, and that would be the right to life, the right not to be in captivity, the right not to have it be owned. So, no, they don't expect the right to vote, but they want the same kind of rights that children enjoy in terms of protection and the same way that if an animal is in captivity, then the animal should be treated in terms of guardianship or conservatorship law as opposed to ownership. And it's very interesting because Stephen Wise, in my book, I've just looked it up during the break, people don't understand, I think, how deeply enmeshed the use of animals is in all of our economic issues. Let me read. This is a quote from him. The blood of a slaughtered cow is used to manufacture plywood adhesive, fertilizer, fire extinguisher foam, and dyes. Her fat helps make plastic tires, crayons, cosmetics, lubricants, soaps, detergents, cough syrup, contraceptive jellies and creams, ink, shaving cream, fabric softeners, synthetic rubber, jet engine lubricants, textiles, corrosion inhibitors, and metal-matching lubricants. Her collagen is found in pie crust, yogurts, matches, banknotes, paper, and cardboard glue. Her intestines are used in strings for musical instruments and rackets, her bones in charcoal ash for refining sugar in ceramics, in cleaning and polishing compounds. Medical and scientific uses abound, and there is so much, much more. You know, how he mentioned how a cow is used, every bit of that cow is made proper use of. That, to me, shows tremendous respect for the animal. And it is very productive and very efficient. If we made it so that we could not have any domestication of animals or instrumental use, all of those uses and many, many, many more would go away. What would that do to us as an economy? What would that do to us as an advanced society? We need to be able to use animals properly and humanely for our own welfare and our own benefit. And it's about time we started considering our duty to each other, to humankind, as well as our duty to animals.
Wesley Smith is senior fellow at the Discovery Institute's Center for Human Exceptionalism. He's author of several books, including A Rat is a Pig, is a Dog is a Boy, The Human Cost of the Animal Rights Movement. And he's author of a column for National Review Online called Human Exceptionalism. You will find a link to his books and to his website at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Thank you very much, Wesley. I greatly appreciate your time.
Thank you. It's always good to be on your show.